We've been getting many questions from listeners through our Wisconsin portal on Facebook and email, and of course in calls to our talk shows here on the Ideas Network. And we're doing our best to answer your questions in the days and weeks to come. Today, Dr. Jeff Potthoff. He's the chief quality officer for UW Health. Dr. Potthoff, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Awesome. Thanks, Keely, for having me.
First, we know this number is changing rapidly, but how many people have been diagnosed with COVID-19 in Wisconsin?
I believe the number right now is 72, but like you said, that could change by the end of the day.
And how does our testing rate affect that number?
So testing rate's important because if we have difficulty with testing some people, we may miss the true positive rate of COVID-19 in our communities.
Okay, so are we testing everyone with symptoms, or what's the status when it comes to testing in Wisconsin?
Unfortunately not. We are still seeing some shortages, sometimes with the test kits and sometimes the reagents, so the chemicals that we use when the lab runs the test, so much so that we've been having to prioritize who gets the test so that we use tests on individuals who are most likely to benefit. So I think we saw recommendations from the Department of Public Health today. At UW Health, we've been doing this for a while now, whereby the most important person we want to test is someone who is already ill enough to require hospitalization. We'd want to know if that individual is affected by COVID-19 or not. We also prioritize healthcare workers, and this may sound funny on the surface, but what we don't want to have happen is a healthcare worker be infected with COVID-19, go to work, not know it, and potentially transmit that to another person. And the second reason we test healthcare workers is because we need all of our doctors and nurses on the front lines during this time. And the sooner we can kind of know that they're not COVID positive, the quicker we can try to get them back to work. A third group is high-risk patients, so individuals who are older, say over the age of 60, over the age of 70, who have those comorbid conditions we've been talking about, heart disease, lung disease, those individuals who may have a more difficult course if they're COVID positive, we would want to test those. If we had unlimited testing, we'd also want to test individuals who have, you know, fever, dry cough, kind of the normal symptoms, but otherwise are younger, they're for the most part healthy, they'd be able to do just fine at home. In an ideal world, we'd want to test them so we know the total number of positives, but because we don't have enough tests and we know that we wouldn't change treatment even if we knew if they were COVID positive 19 or not, those are individuals who aren't being tested in large quantities at this time.
So how should we think about then the number 72 at this stage? I mean, it sounds like it's likely we have more positives in Wisconsin. We just haven't confirmed them.
Yeah, I think at this point, the number becomes less relevant. I think when we were thinking about a containment strategy where we could identify individuals who had traveled or had an exposure and then identify them in the community, it's interesting at that juncture to know a number. I think today with the announcement that there's community spread, I think we just have to think that anyone could really have this. And if I have symptoms that are consistent with COVID-19, I should probably assume that I have the virus and then take the steps that I need to keep everyone else in my home safe and healthy. So isolate myself, make sure I wash my hands regularly, things like that.
And speaking of that, if someone is exposed to the virus, how would they show symptoms?
Yeah, so we do know that the most common symptom is a dry cough, and I think that we are seeing that in over like 70% of cases. Another common symptom is fever. Initial reports had that in like 60% of patients. There's some reports now saying that maybe it's a little bit less than that. And then other things that we're seeing are sore throat. That's a pretty common symptom. Body aches and fatigue. And then surprisingly, runny nose, maybe not as often, but just because you have a runny nose, that wouldn't mean that you couldn't have COVID. COVID-19.
Okay, but not necessarily one of the ways that you could know that it's a potential that it's what you're dealing with.
Yeah, I think the hard part with COVID-19 is a lot of these symptoms we've just listed off are similar to just about any other viral upper respiratory tract infection. So you could have the flu. We saw a lot of that. We test people for influenza when they think they have COVID-19. It actually ends up being influenza because we still have a little bit of that around. And then there's a whole bunch of other viruses that can cause mild symptoms, but early on, you wouldn't really know the difference.
What about this idea of being a vector, carrying the virus, not actually knowing it, not showing symptoms?
Yeah, so we hear about this a lot, and we do know that it is possible to transmit COVID-19 when you're asymptomatic, so before you become symptomatic. We don't think that the rate of transmission or infectivity is nearly as high, so although people who are asymptomatic can transmit the virus, we don't think they can transmit it as easily as someone who is actively symptomatic with a fever or a cough or active symptoms. And then the same is true on the other side, what we call convalescence. When you no longer have a fever, we do believe there's a period of time, maybe a couple days, where you could still transmit virus, but probably much less effectively than when you're actually symptomatic.
But it does sound like then that there's a pretty significant window when someone could be contagious.
There is a pretty significant window, and that's what's so difficult with COVID-19 and why I think we have all these social distancing practices in place, because just feeling fine probably isn't good enough. You could feel fine but still infect people. We know that's especially true in younger people and in children.
Dr. Jeff Potthoff is Chief Quality Officer for UW Health, and we're talking about COVID-19 right now, answering some of your questions that have come in through Wisconsin. You can also give us a call right now at 800-642-1234 to ask the doctor your question about COVID-19, how it spreads, what precautions you should take. We're taking those calls now at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Potthoff, we've had a lot of questions about how long this novel coronavirus can live on hard surfaces. What is that length of time?
I still think we're figuring it out. So I've seen reports that are as long as 9 days. With coronaviruses in general, they don't typically do well on surfaces. So I think in the coming months, we'll know longer how long they survive, and then how long they survive but are resilient enough where they can cause infection should you contaminate yourself with them. We do know that there is at least a period of time where they can live on surfaces like doorknobs, tabletops. So we are encouraging folks to wipe those things down with disinfectant wipes on a fairly regular basis, especially if you're having symptoms, URI symptoms or COVID-19 symptoms.
Yeah, what about things like clothing?
They don't do as well on clothing, so I haven't heard too many reports of concern of a lot of transmission on clothing. We do use gowns to protect patients in the hospital. Healthcare workers wear those gowns. So I imagine that it's not a zero risk, but I think it's much lower than hard surfaces like that.
You know, for people without health insurance, there's always a concern about unexpected or high costs when it comes to care. If someone doesn't have insurance and they're concerned they might have COVID-19, what should they do?
Yeah, I think if they're concerned that they have COVID-19, and just like anyone else who maybe does have health insurance, if you think you have COVID-19, but you're handling it well, and we know that 82% of people will be able to get through COVID-19 without seeking medical treatment, it is okay to take over-the-counter medications and isolate yourself in the home. If, however, you are having severe shortness of breath and you're becoming concerned, it would be appropriate to seek out medical care at that time. And I don't think we have all the details worked out exactly on how the billing is going to work with that and whether the government will step in, but I certainly wouldn't encourage someone to not seek out care if they feel like they can't breathe just based on their health insurance status.
Okay, so if you really do need to see a doctor, see a doctor.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We have Kryn from Green Bay on the line with a question now. Hi, Kryn.
Hi. I was just calling because I was wondering, you mentioned that you haven't been testing everyone who's come with symptoms, mostly younger people, and I was wondering how many people, if you have a number, have there been?
Interesting. Trying to kind of get some context to this. Thanks for the question, Kryn. Dr. Potthoff?
Yeah, so for people that we've tested, it's well into the hundreds, and that's been limited a little bit by the early testing. We are hopeful that we can get improved testing in the very near future. It's one of our top priorities, and if that were the case, we may be able to, you know, triple or quadruple the number of people who are being tested.
Any guess on the number of people that we've had to turn away from our healthcare institutions because of those limited tests?
I actually don't have the number on that. I'm not sure. Lots of times we take their name and then we sometimes try to follow up later for testing, but I know even that's getting less possible given the constraint on testing.
All right. Sounds good. Our conversation with Dr. Jeff Potthoff continues here. He is Chief Quality Officer for UW Health, and he's with us now to answer your medical questions about COVID-19. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about COVID-19? Maybe you've heard some conflicting information that Dr. Potthoff might be able to sort through with us. 800-642-1234. You can also submit questions through our Wisconsin project by going to the WPR.org homepage. Our conversation continues in just a bit here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina. We're talking with Dr. Jeff Potthoff. He's the Chief Quality Officer for UW Health, and he's with us to answer your medical questions about COVID-19. And let's go ahead and take another call. Let's go to Andy in Beaver Dam. Hi, Andy. What's your question?
Hi. I was wondering what the effects of coronavirus are on pregnant women.
Okay, sounds great. Thanks, Andy. Dr. Potthoff, are pregnant women at a greater risk? Or are they in that high-risk category?
So we have one study that's out of China that looks at pregnant women who got COVID-19. Unfortunately, it's a very small number of patients, like less than 10. So what we know is it doesn't seem like pregnant women are more susceptible to get COVID-19, but we're assuming that they would have slight increase as far as the severity of disease, but only based on the idea that that's a common thing that happens in most women who are pregnant. Their immune systems are just a little bit weaker. But to give like firm guidance or firm recommendations on what happens in pregnant women, we just don't know yet.
Yeah, Andy, thanks for the call and the question at 800-642-1234. There's a line for you and your medical question there, too. Now let's go ahead and welcome Nancy from Janesville. Nancy, what are you wondering today?
Yes, I'm wondering about, I'm a retired medical professional. I'm a PA, and my husband's a retired family doctor. We are concerned about the lack of reagent that a speaker just talked about, that there's not enough reagent to really do the tests. We know how easy this test is to do, that it's a pretty basic test, and we're just kind of appalled and wondering what does he think's going on that we don't have enough testing.
Okay, Nancy, thanks so much for that call. Dr. Potthoff, what is the problem? Why can't we get enough tests?
Yeah, no, I agree with Nancy. I think we just weren't prepared for the amount of reagent that we would need for these tests. There's just so many individuals that we would like to test and so many places in the U.S. that are trying to test that our supply chain just hasn't been able to keep up. So I think I share everyone's frustration with our inability to test everyone who we would like to test.
And when you say we, you're talking big picture we, not UW Health or Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah, right.
But
no,
all
big picture. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole medical community in the United States wishes we could offer testing to anyone who would like it.
We also had a question from Matthew, who called 800-642-1234. Matthew in Madison asked, is this expected to go away during the summer months? Will warmer weather affect COVID-19? What do we know?
Yeah, so we can only hope. So when we look at other respiratory viruses and other COVID viruses, they oftentimes do have some seasonal variation where they start to decrease as our weather warms up. Sometimes they move to the southern hemisphere, who are experiencing winter when we experience summer, and then they can come back again in the fall. We see that often with influenza, but even with influenza, we don't see it every year. Sometimes we have influenza seasons that expand into the summer, and doctors and scientists don't understand that real well. So we all have our fingers crossed that this dies down in the summer months. But when we think about our planning efforts, we assume that it might be with us for a while.
Yeah. And what about this idea of reinfection? If someone is exposed to the novel coronavirus, whether it turns into the disease COVID-19 or not, does the person develop an immunity then? And if they get sick, can they get sick again?
Yeah, so this is a great question, and it's been studied a little bit more so in China. So we would assume that if you get infected with COVID-19, you would develop some degree of immunity to the virus. Unfortunately, with most coronaviruses, that immunity is somewhat short-lived. So if you think of the common head cold, all of us have had more than one common head cold. We're not exactly sure what will happen with COVID-19. We think we're aware of one case in China where someone became reinfected with it. Our best guess is that after you're infected with COVID-19, you probably have some degree of immunity, but for a period of time that we're not sure yet.
All right. Bob from Madison has a question for us. Good afternoon, Bob.
Good afternoon. I hope I can phrase this correctly, but if you come in contact with someone, then of course you don't want to spread it around. But how do you know, since we don't know who has it in like Dane County, which there was 10 or so, I think, how can you find out who has it?
Oh, yeah, good question, Bob, right? Because we don't, it's certainly one thing, Dr. Potthoff, if you know you've been in contact with someone who has a confirmed case of COVID-19, but we're with a lot of people who don't.
Yeah, that's true. And it's true that you really can't know who has it and who doesn't have it. It's easy if it's the person who is, you know, dripping of sweat, has a fever and is coughing. I think all of us would try to avoid that person. But we also know there's individuals who won't appear that sick, who may be infected with the virus. And that is really why we're recommending this social distancing. So whether someone looks healthy or not healthy, we're recommending you stay 6 feet away from them. And the reason is because the coronavirus, which is spread in kind of big droplets, if someone coughs or sneezes, it's rare for those particles to extend more than 6 feet from that person. And that's why we're recommending this social distancing to basically inhibit the spread, because we can't really tell who has it and who doesn't. Even the person who has it doesn't know.
Yeah, and you also have to be sensitive about it, but also not take it personally. I mean, our board operator, Sarah, and I have actually moved even farther apart today. We both appear to be completely healthy, but you just don't know.
You don't know, and it seems so unnatural, so you almost have to think about what you're doing, because it's just not like anything we've ever asked anybody to do before.
Right. All right. Carol from Duluth has a question, too. Carol, what are you wondering about COVID-19?
I'm wondering about the fever. Is it a low-grade fever, or do you get a real high fever? And what do you recommend, Tylenol or nothing, or what? Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Carol. Yeah, how to define a fever. That's a struggle from the time you have a tiny baby in your house. You're trying to figure out what is a fever and what isn't.
So the official definition of fever is a temperature greater than 100.4 degrees. That's how we would define a fever, and that's how the fever is defined in these studies that we see. Obviously, before you have a fever of 100.4 degrees, you might be, you know, warmer than your 98.6, but that we don't typically define as a fever. As far as how to treat it, definitely recommend that people use Tylenol. There are some studies, and I'd say the medical evidence is incomplete on whether or not we should be avoiding ibuprofen or not. So with that said, I would suggest starting with Tylenol. And then if that doesn't work, I don't think there's a strong contraindication to ibuprofen. But if you can manage your fevers with ibuprofen, that's great. The most important thing to keep in mind, if you were to come down with COVID-19 and be self-isolating, is to stay hydrated. That seems kind of out of right field, but really the thing that we see people get the most in trouble with viral illnesses, and this includes influenza and other ones, they may be home, they may be doing okay, but they get dehydrated, and that actually makes them more sick than the virus themselves.
We're talking with Dr. Jeff Potthoff, who's the Chief Quality Officer for UW Health, and we're busting some myths and answering some questions about COVID-19. Then there is time for your question. If you email us at ideas@WPR.org, we might be able to incorporate it on the air here. John from Dodgeville has a question for us, too. Hi, John.
Yes, thanks for taking the call. The question is, I run a service business that requires employees to go into residential homes. We've asked them to wear rubber gloves. Should they also be wearing a mask?
Okay. Thanks for that question, John. What do you think, Dr. Potthoff? Is a mask appropriate in this circumstance?
Boy, that's a hard question to ask or answer, because in most of these homes, it's unlikely you'll come in contact with someone who's going to cough on you. I think, and the other, just the practical limitation of it is it's going to be hard to find masks. So what can I advise people given those constraints? I think a good advice is if you enter those homes, you may want to try to stay farther away from those individuals. I'm not sure the service industry that you're in, but if you can stay 6 feet away, that's good. And also there's a time component. So if you're within proximity of individuals, but you're there for less than 10 minutes, we know transmission rates, infection rates are lower. So both try to distance yourself, decrease the time that you're in contact with people. Might be good suggestions in lieu of a mask, where if you were, you know, say a home health care provider who was going to take care of someone who had a URI type symptom in the home, we would want those individuals to be outfitted with a mask.
Okay, so it does depend on the work, and certainly we don't want to use masks when it's not necessary, especially as there's a shortage. So that makes the decision harder for different people running businesses. Mm-hmm. Matt from Nisida is on the line now. What's your question, Matt?
Hi there. Given the shortage of testing supplies, what is the CDC's recommendation for relatively young, healthy people with symptoms of COVID-19? Should they get tested, or should they just stay home and leave the testing supplies for the vulnerable?
Okay. Thanks, Matt. And Dr. Potthoff, what are we dealing with especially, specifically younger people who are generally healthy but suddenly have these symptoms?
Yeah, and I'm not sure if the CDC has changed their guidance, but the guidance from the state and really the guidance from our special pathogen experts here are if you're young and you're healthy and you're doing okay with the virus, so you feel a little down and out, maybe you've had a fever, but you're doing okay, I think at this point it's safe to assume that you may have COVID-19, and that likelihood still isn't 100%, but assume you might have COVID-19, isolate yourself and take care of yourself at home using over-the-counter medications, and we know that most people will recover just fine, usually in 7 days, sometimes up to 14 days, but usually on the shorter end of that, and they'll do just fine. So I think until we get the testing thing sorted out, that would be our recommendation, is if you otherwise wouldn't have gone to the hospital because you were worried about your breathing or getting a labs or a test, you don't need to with COVID-19 either.
And we aren't able to fit in this call, but Lisa from Wyawega does wonder, are there long-term health effects even if you recover? Dr. Potthoff, do we have any idea at this point?
You know, we don't. I mean, in December or November, this didn't exist. So this is brand new for all of us, and we just don't have the longitudinal studies to know what the long-term effects are. We do have other people who get the kind of end pulmonary or lung pathology that is associated with COVID-19, and those people can make full recoveries.
All right, Dr. Potthoff, we really appreciate your time. We have just scratched the surface, and we definitely thank you for helping us understand and get a better handle on COVID-19. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Keely. Appreciate the time, too.
Dr. Jeff Potthoff is Chief Quality Officer for UW Health, and many of these questions were informed by your submissions through the Wisconsin Project. We're working to answer more of those questions, so you can submit them online by going to WPR.org.